Hello, this is Real Estate Insights, the podcast from Savills that interrogates the data of every part of the property world. And today we're taking our annual look at the world's brightest and best cities for the tech sector.
It is still the likes of San Francisco, New York at the top, but it is sort of slightly lower down the list that you see the really interesting players, Atlanta, Tallinn, all kind of on the rise because of those tech subsectors.
You know, I always look to some of the emerging economies in Southeast Asia, your Ho Chi Minh's and Hanoi's. If I look at the dynamics of a place like a Vietnam with a large youthful population, increasingly educated, and the investment that's happened in that market from places like South Korea and Japan, it's on a significant scale.
I think they have high expectations of their space a lot of the time, and they want the sort of real grade A with good green credentials, and some cities have much bigger stock of that green space than others.
I'm Guy Ruddle, and I have with me a team that's pretty much got the globe covered when it comes to tech cities. Let's start with Paul Tostevin, who's Director of World Research for Savills, no stranger to Real Estate Insights. Paul, lovely to have you back in the studio. How have you been?
Really good. Great to be here.
Excellent. We'll get to Paul's sort of tech cities report in a moment. But before that, Gemma Malapereman is Director of Occupational Services for the EMEA region. She specialises in utilities and the tech sector. Gemma, welcome to Real Estate Insights. Your first time here.
Yes, thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And on the line from Hong Kong is Adam Evanet, who is Regional Director of Cross-Border Tenant Advisory in that part of the world. Adam's not been on the podcast before as well. Adam, welcome to Real Estate Insights.
Thanks, Guy. Good to be here.
Great stuff. So let's get started on this then. There's a lot to talk about with tech at the moment, of course, but let's, before we get into what's happening with the whole sector, Paul, perhaps we could have a chat about your annual Tech Cities report. I've had a look at it. I always love the sort of, you know, which cities are up and down in the overall list, but I'm sort of getting a sense that it's all got a bit more granular this year than it has in the past.
It has. So this year we focused on what's sometimes called the Internet 4.0. So that's the clever tech. And that's as varied as AI to deep tech to climate tech to life sciences. And we've aggregated cities that perform well in the different sectors. And to some extent, the same cities do well, but there's some really interesting movers and shakers further down the list.
And is that relatively new, the idea that some cities are sort of specialists, places for particular types of tech, or is that sort of evolved recently, or has that always been the case, do you think?
I think it's been the case to a degree, but I think as technology has continued to develop and touches every industry, we're seeing certain specialist cities rise. So you've got your top tier cities, you've got San Francisco, you've got Silicon Valley, you've got New York, London, Beijing, but then you've got this really interesting sort of additional tiers that include the likes of Singapore, which is very strong, for example, in fintech and ag tech, through to the likes of Oslo, for example, which is a leader in clean tech, really sort of leveraging the city's sort of clean and environmental credentials.
And Gemma, from your point of view, you're sort of on the ground a bit on this. Do you recognise that picture that Paul's report is painting?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I was looking at an example in the UK of Bristol, which hasn't appeared on the list before and now comes as number 12 on the deep tech list. That just comes from a really interesting background of the original aeronautical industry and the chip industry that's developed there. I think I saw reference to it being called Silicon Gorge these days, that area. So there's a new one for us.
We're going to have to be slightly careful, I guess, about when these things like deep tech, ag tech. I mean, ag tech is agricultural technology, right? And fintech is financial technology, etc. What do we mean by deep tech?
Deep tech is the clever stuff. So that's as varied as AI's in there. You've got Internet of Things.
It's the kind of the really large macro fundamental issues, isn't it? And it kind of brings in a lot of different tiers of specialisms that contribute to a solution.
Adam, what about your part of the world? I mean, it's a big area, and obviously you include China in your territory, which, you know, gets some of the top cities anyway. But do you see this sort of, to a certain extent, you know, different areas being specialised in different things?
Yeah, I think similarly. Look, it is a big area, obviously. So, you know, within Asia, we've got the obvious heavyweights of your China's and India. But I think that picture is, you know, in common. We see, you know, I guess the tech sector being more and more broad, more diverse. What you might have thought about the tech sector proper, you know, even as recently as 5 years ago, you know, continues to broaden. If I, you know, as an example, if you look at, you know, you mentioned fintech there earlier, you know, a lot of the traditional finance, insurance, banking companies now really identifying as more technology companies as you work towards you know, mobile payments. And really competing for a similar, you know, similar talent pool.
At the very top level of the biggest ones, Paul, has anything you know, New York, San Francisco have always been right up there. London's done pretty well. Has anything fundamentally changed at the very top of the big cities?
Yeah, I mean, so it is still the likes of San Francisco, New York at the top. They are obviously big cities, big hubs, lots of complementary industry, attractive to talent. Of course, they have access to funding, which is really critical as well. We still see the likes of Austin up there, which is one of the smaller centres that's doing well, partly because of its, you know, it's in Texas. There's certain advantages there. But also very attractive to talent. Of course, there's a lifestyle play there too. But yeah, it is sort of slightly lower down the list that you see the really interesting players. Atlanta, Tallinn, all kind of on the rise because of those tech subsectors.
Yeah. And just very briefly, if possible, just remind us all of how you do your, you know, what goes into your rankings, what measures you're using.
So we look at business environment, the city's tech environment, the city's buzz and wellness. So how vibrant is that city? How attractive is it to talent? Also wellness, really important post-pandemic. But of course, venture capital investment, really important as well. So we factor that in too.
So let's talk sort of more broadly about the tech sector generally. I mean, I think it would be fair to say that 2022 wasn't the easiest of years for the tech sector. You know, lots of companies at least briefly downsized a bit, all those companies that I talk to quite often downsized a bit and then got built back up again with staff. You have the whole FTX situation. You've now currently got the Silicon Valley Bank situation going on. Gemma, from your point of view, you're talking to people all the time. What's the mood like out there?
I think 2022 was a year of adjustment, and there was a lot of adjusting in the valuation of companies. And to prove their profitability, there was unfortunately an adjustment in terms of layoffs and headcounts. But I think we're still seeing the average headcount is 66% up on pre-pandemic levels across the board. So whereas there was a sort of a reduction last year, it's still on the back of a very strong growth in the last 3 years. So I think it's looking positive for what's to come ahead because that adjustment has now taken place.
And those, you know, adjustments that happen, particularly in staffing levels, are they done with confidence and with certainty, or are they done with a certain amount of one? We'll do it for now, and we're not sure what we're going to be doing in 6 months' time.
I get the sense they're done with confidence in terms of if we do this, it then means we can take more funding from the VCs, or we can then float next year, and it gives the certainty to their sort of financial future. So it's seen as a sort of short-term pain, long-term, hopefully recovery gain and, you know, growth.
Yeah. Adam, is that a picture that you recognise?
Yeah, I think we see a similar thing across Asia. I guess, you know, it's maybe a little bit different in different geographies, in different countries. There's some cultural factors, I think, that play into that a little bit. Obviously, the pandemic, you know, nothing's complete without mentioning the pandemic, I guess, but you know, sitting here in Hong Kong, that experience is still very recent. You know, only up to a couple of months ago, travel into and out of China was, you know, pretty much completely restricted. So, you know, the experience of that on all sectors, but, you know, looking specifically at the tech sector in China is hard to ignore. But, you know, there's cultural factors. If I look at China, you know, there is a tendency of businesses and staff towards presenteeism that maybe doesn't exist in the same way in some other markets in your North America or Europe particularly. And although it's been difficult to go in and out of China, we see, you know, on many occasions, you know, short, sharp lockdowns and then pretty much a normal experience in those cities. So, you know, there hasn't been the kind of long periods of work from home where these businesses really had to adjust to a different working model. So, very, very different depending on the sector and depending on the, you know, the geography we're looking at across Asia.
And I suppose, Paul, there's a danger of me asking about what's happening right now rather than what's happening in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, tech cities is about long-term city success, and there's a certain core things that are at the heart of that, one of which is education. You know, almost without exception, all our cities have very strong higher education institutions, obviously generating talent, generating research and commercializing that research. And that, you know, that goes on regardless of sort of business cycles.
Yeah. Interesting what you're talking about, Adam, with presenteeism, because one of the things that I noticed when I talk to some of the smaller tech companies that are doing well, they quite often go from, you know, six people in a room for 3 years to 150 people in five or six different offices around the world in a year. And, you know, and some of it's home working and some of it's, you know, present in the office and things. That's a very complicated thing for a bunch of software engineers, software developers who've got some VC backing to deal with, right?
Yeah, it is. And look, I think, you know, depending on the industry, you might think, you know, at face value that the tech companies or the tech industry is kind of, you know, very well prepared, I guess, to work remotely. But if you look a bit deeper, you know, a lot of those businesses they're creative at the core, right? Their business is innovation, and having people together, being able to work collaboratively, is often the, you know, it's the ingredient for success of a lot of these small, fast growing companies. So to lose that in the process really puts at risk their business model and the things that underlines their success.
Gemma, do they have the skills? I mean, they're not really. Are they set up to be able to manage a property portfolio in five different countries and all that sort of thing?
Well, as you said, if it starts with six people, it's very unusual for one of those six to have a property background and to be able to set up that sort of property expertise that they need. So, no, it's definitely something where on the ground help is always very useful at that point. It is a gap that is largely filled by the sort of serviced office, you know, hot desking sort of plug and play environment, basically. So that is definitely sort of filling the gap in that initial expansion, I would say.
And Paul, in when you're looking at your tech cities, particularly below the top, the biggest cities, does that ability of a city to have the right people advising companies like this coming in, does that help in your rank? Well, not maybe not in the rankings, but just generally.
I think so, and particularly when you look at the emerging tech sectors, you know, things like biotech, mobility tech, it's not just office space, it's lab space, it's engineering space, it's a diversity of real estate that does require specialist expertise.
I'd concur with what Paul says. I mean, we see it in this region all the time where you've got these fast-moving, fast-growing companies. You know, not only are they growing fast, they're entering new geographies, entering new markets, and having a trusted advisor there to help them navigate that and work out a strategy that's suited for that particular client is really important.
Paul touched on the actual office space requirements, particularly in the sort of more specialist areas where you might have, you know, need for research and the like. Gemma, do tech companies fundamentally, away from the service office bit, when they're taking their own space, do they have very different requirements, do you think, to a lot of other occupiers?
I think they have high expectations of their space a lot of the time, and they want the sort of real grade A with good green credentials. And I think that's come out in the report this year, hasn't it? Is some cities have much bigger stock of that green space than others. And it's going to only become more important, isn't it?
Does it have to look cool?
I think there's an element to that, yes. I think they like, because it's all about appealing to the workforce, they do like to have nice coffee machines and breakout areas and games rooms and all those things. I mean, I've seen an office in this country with £1 million gym fitted in it.
Really?
Yeah. And they fitted it out during lockdown in, you know, the hope that it would then appeal to their staff. So, you know, there is definitely a sort of staff retention issue.
Do you know whether anyone uses it?
There was no one in the day I went, but I think they do.
Yeah. Adam, I go to quite a lot of tech companies at the moment, and I see an awful lot of breakout areas. An awful lot of breakout areas. Not very many offices.
Yeah, that's probably a common observation, I think, in the sector. I think there's a, I don't want to say there's a standard, but there's a, you know, I think there's a look that people have, you know, associate, you know, a tech office. And the same would apply in this part of the world, I'd say. Guy? I would just say that in Asia, you know, we much like in the other geographies, I guess, but, you know, the some of the scale of these facilities, if you look at a company like Huawei in China or your Alibaba's, you know, everything from like huge campus facilities, similarly in Bengaluru in India, huge campus facilities, style facilities, city-sized facilities in some cases, down to, you know, flexible workplace, down to, you know, traditional commercial office space. So it's really, you know, again, depending on the stage of the growth of the company and the scale of it, it really does run that gamut. But I think, you know, using that physical space as an opportunity to distinguish that business is something that is pretty baked in, I think, in the sector.
Yeah, I know. I think it's all about the appeal to talent, isn't it? And talent retention. Mm. And I think I've even heard that, you know, it's known that talent can give companies a star rating for the, you know, it's the hotelification of the office space, basically, isn't it? They've got high demands, some of these staff. They want beer on a Friday, lunch 3 days a week and everything else that goes with it. They want to bring their dog to work and everything else. So, you know, it's responding to staff demand.
We tend to see the most successful cities are the most expensive. Do you think there's an opportunity here in the current environment for some companies to obtain space at a lower cost, or is it more complex than that?
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing from some of our global clients that they're downsizing by a floor in a building, and it's other companies are taking it on for a project space or as a sublet space for a sort of startup. But it's whether they want to take the financial hit of making potentially a loss on that space versus just mothballing it and keeping it for when they re-expand.
So look, we've talked about where we are now, where we were in the past, where we are now. Tell me about the sort of the great tech city, or not big necessarily, but the tech cities of the future that you think are going to be, look, watch this one, this is going to be an amazing place to locate in the next, I don't know, 5 years' time, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, look to Africa, really interesting things happening there. So Lagos and Cairo, both emerging in the fintech space. We've seen them sort of leapfrog traditional banking, embracing mobile banking. Of course, both located in very fast-going countries with big domestic talent pools and markets. In a similar vein, Accra in Ghana, a growing hub for clean tech. Again, really sort of fast-growing populations, educated populations as well. Actually, looking to Germany, Mainz in Germany, home of BioNTech, sort of became a bit of a household name in the pandemic. Small city, 200,000 people, but home to three universities. So really education sort of driving innovation and growth there.
Gemma, just on Germany and the whole Mittelstadt thing, you know, where you've got these sort of, you know, mid-sized towns, lots of companies, as Paul mentions, you know, Bayer has its headquarters in a town the size of Leicester or something. I mean, that may not be totally accurate, but it's sort of something like that. Is that a particular sort of opportunity, do you think?
Yes, I suppose it's a different model to the sort of UK classic everyone has to be in London. So, yeah, different opportunities and different experience for the people working there. They're working in campuses and sort of more purpose-built facilities.
And apart from that, where's, you know, when Paul's talking about Africa and in EMEA, you know, cities that you think just watch out for this one here.
Oh, I don't know, it's back to Bristol, I think. Actually, it's just a really interesting one. Quality of life, education, the experience, or sort of the experience the city has with things like the BBC Natural History Unit and air and nautical industry. It's just an interesting hotbed, I think, of what could be to come.
Good university. Everyone I know who went to Bristol University never wanted to leave.
Exactly. They all stayed. So it's got a lot of talent, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Adam, what about you? What cities we've never heard of?
Cities that you've never heard of, maybe not, but cities that haven't made the list, yes, I guess, you know, I always look to some of the emerging economies in Southeast Asia. Yeah, Ho Chi Minh's and Hanoi's. Vietnam has obviously been a beneficiary of some of the movement of manufacturing. But, you know, if I look at the dynamics of a place like a Vietnam with a young population, large youthful population, increasingly educated, and the investment that's happened in that market from places like South Korea and Japan, it's on a significant scale. And I think, you know, if they were to follow the path that a lot of other cities and countries have trod, then, you know, that would be an example of one place that I think it's got all of those ingredients, those dynamics.
Right, come on then. We can't finish without doing our regular feature of Tell Me Something I Don't Know. There's a look of terror in it from at least one person in the studio. This is the bit where you've got to come up with a little sort of fact that sort of shines an extra light on this whole subject area that we perhaps haven't covered yet. I think we'll save Paul till last. He's done it a number of times before, so he's an old hand. Why don't we start with you, Adam? Tell us something we don't know.
I thought I might share an anecdote, actually. So I was recently up in China for the first time in 3.5 years. So I used to live in China for 5 years, so know it quite well. What amazed me is how fast that economy changes, how dynamic it is. And a takeaway for me was the proportion of the cars on the street of brands that have really grown, all EV cars, you know, brands like BYD that, you know, other people might have heard of, but XPeng, NIO, ROWE, based all over China. And I think it's kind of reflective of that kind of that decoupling and the, you know, the fact that it is a, you know, it's a completely different, very dynamic and rapidly changing economy.
Gemma. Tell me, come on then, tell me something I don't know.
Not quite as glamorous, but there is still the old school sort of, I'm looking at Oxford as an example of a city that remains in the tech cities, as well as being an ancient university. It's 14th in the Health and Life Sciences Index, 64th overall. And there's recently been plans for a new pharmaceutical company to have a research facility just outside Oxford. So I think that's the tip of the iceberg for them. So yeah, it's don't forget the sort of old school as well as all the brand new ones.
Yeah. Well, I rather built you up by saying you'd done it before you knew what you were doing. So good luck.
I've got some numbers for you, actually. So we talk a lot about venture capital investment when it comes to tech. $254 billion was invested last year. Now, that's actually down 11% on the prior year, but it's actually the fifth consecutive year that it's been above $200 billion. So recent sort of drop, but actually in the long-term context, well above the 10-year average.
It's not going away.
Correct.
Well, listen, thank you all very, very much for that. Thank you for your time and thank you for your wisdom. Always good to do the Tech Cities annual report. If all that's done is whet your appetite for more, the full Tech Cities 2023 report is available on the Impact section of the Savills website. It's a slightly different address, so listen carefully. Savills.com/impacts. That's Savills.com, not co.uk/impacts. Impact. The full report's there, replete with loads of detail and whizzy graphics and everything. That's it for this episode of Real Estate Insights. Thank you very much for listening and see you next time.
This podcast is for general information only and should not be considered professional advice. Savills accepts no liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss arising from the use of, reference to, or reliance on this podcast or its content. Savills makes no warranty as to the accuracy of the information in this podcast. This podcast and all copyright in this podcast is the property of Savills, and it shall not be used, reproduced, or quoted in whole or in part without Savills' prior written consent.